You're listening to KRFP Recovery Radio, and this is Denise and my co-host Johnny, and I are in the studio with our guest Tom, and he's in recovery, and he's going to share what's been going on with his life. This is a one-hour program where our guests share stories related to recovery from addiction and or mental health issues. And so, Tom, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? Just give us some background on maybe how long you've been in recovery and what you do for a living.
All right. Well, I'm 5'8", not that much news. No, anyways, as far as recovery goes, is that where you want me to go first?
Sure. With
recovery? I went through a place in California called Cider House back December 28th of 1988, recovering from a drug addiction. There is pretty deep into the disease. And
how did that come about? How did you wind up getting into that program? What had happened before that?
Well, I was recently a single father that was married and had a child that was in Hawaii. I was living and working in Hawaii, and my ex decided that she wanted to seek other adventures because we were neck deep into addiction. It's mm-hmm. hard to have a relationship built around a drug habit. It's a little difficult. So she decided to do other things and left me with this 2-year-old kid that I was trying to raise by myself, and mm-hmm. it was not going so well. At one point, I went to go pick him up from work, and he wasn't there, and lo and behold, my mother, my brothers, and some other family members and friends were there, and they gave me an ultimatum. And the ultimatum was either I went to a rehab center, which, like I said, was Cider House. Mm-hmm. I had a choice to go there, or they would go the next morning and get full custody of my son. And I wasn't really willing to do that. I mean, I mm-hmm. was not an option at that point. I was willing to take the steps. At that point, it was lip service, but sure. I was willing to jump through the hoops.
For your son?
Yeah, for my kid, so.
So, before the show, we had talked a little bit, and you had shared what I feel like is a typical thing an addict might do before they're going to go into a rehab program. So if you could briefly share, what was your next step after telling them, yes, okay, give me a minute?
Yeah, well, exactly. I said, just give me a second. Let me go outside and get a breath of fresh air. So I stepped outside and did the last bit of drugs that I had. I was, at that point, reached the point of my illness where I was injecting mm-hmm. meth. And so I went outside and did the rest of the drugs that I had and took them and threw them in the gutter, the drain. There was a drain mm-hmm. there next to the gutter. So sure. I threw them in there and came back inside and said, I'm ready to go. And so mm-hmm. at that point, a friend of ours, Giles, mm-hmm. he took me down to the Norwalk State Mental Hospital. Mm-hmm. And that was, Cider House was on the mental house grounds, wasn't affiliated with the hospital, but mm-hmm. it was part of their facility. And so that was kind of a wake-up call, I guess.
An experience.
And that was in California, Tom?
Yeah, that was in, yeah, California, and actually the city of Norwalk, which is just kind of outside of Orange County, I do believe.
Fabulous, okay.
Yeah.
So during the time that you were there, what transpired for you?
Well, you know, obviously there was the detox, you know, period of the recovery, which is seems like a lifetime mm-hmm. in a day, sometimes a lifetime in a minute. You know, getting from one point to the next is torturous, you mm-hmm. know, would be, I guess, fair word to say that you kind of, you know, most of you or some of you may know that, you know, that is your life revolves around as the drug, you know, and it is that you can't even think of getting through another minute, or you're thinking about, okay, when is my next minute? How am I going to do this? You know, got to get your next fix. So that was a difficult period for sure.
So emotionally and physically, there's a lot going on while you're there.
Absolutely.
And you don't have that. So what kinds of services did they provide for you while you were there that helped with these these emotional and physical things?
You know, there's they try to get structure. So that, I mean, first thing they do is they try to get you detoxed. You know, and that's for some can be lengthy. Mine was lengthy. You know, for trying to get off. I was so sick.
Sure.
And so they basically they do watch over you, make sure that you're not falling out, and you're eating three squares, and you know, not a lot of television, anything like that. You're there with other people that are in recovery or in their infancy as far as recovery goes.
Sure.
And so they're making sure that you're eating and talking to people. And for some of us, talking is not a problem.
Sure.
At that point, I didn't want to talk to anybody. You know, so they are pretty, they keep on you, I guess, to try to just get you to talk. And there's a way of doing that that you don't even know that they're doing it. Eventually, here I am.
So it sounds like they're asking a lot of good questions and things.
You know,
and then at a certain point, were there like small groups or just basically were you learning? Were there any classes?
Yeah, there was classes and workshops and education, learning of the disease, you know, learning of the disease so that you know what's happening to you, what's your body going through.
Sure.
And so there are a lot of classes and people that you kind of hook up with that are experiencing the same things that you're experiencing, so you can, you know, and there's always somebody that you can connect with, even if it's, well, there's always somebody to connect with. And it is, as far as that goes, not, they keep men separate from women.
Sure.
Because you need to kind of focus on you at that point. It's not about her.
Right.
You're not in there to date.
No, man, exactly. That is not the time to be trying to find a wife anyways. Or your husband, whatever you're...
Did you realize that there was any kind of problem going on in your life? I mean, were there any indications for you? Or was it just seeming kind of normal?
Well, at that point, I had thought that was normal. You know, I thought what I was doing on a daily basis was normal. And so now when I did finally realize that there was a problem, I mean, I could see that there was things going on, you know, family members talking and, you know, people, you know, may stare because I'm getting skinnier and as the disease progresses, you know. And so there was a point that I think I did recognize that this was an issue that was going on. And when the big day came, that I didn't know that day was coming, because it is kind of one of those things that an intervention is not something that you prepare for.
Sure. Yeah, it just happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
we're going to take a quick break, and we will be back in just a few minutes. You're listening to KRFP, Recovery Radio, and I'm in the studio with Tom today, and our co-host is Johnny.
Want me to sing?
Strike up a tune.
Word man with a word mind. No one in front of me and nothing behind. There's a woman on my lap and she's drinking champagne. That white skin got assassin's eyes. I'm looking up into the sapphire tinted skies. I'm wild dressed, waiting on the last. Standing on the gallows with my head in the news. Any minute now I'm expecting all hell to break loose. People are crazy and talks are strange. I'm locked in tight, I'm out of range. I used to care, but things have changed. This place ain't doing me any good. I'm in the wrong town, I should be in Hollywood. Just for a second there I thought I saw something move. Gonna take dancing lessons to the jitterbug rag. Ain't no shortcuts, gonna dress in drag. Only a fool here would think you've got anything to prove. A lot of water under the bridge, a lot of other stuff too. Don't get up, gentlemen, I'm only passing through. People are crazy, times are strange. I'm locked in tight, I'm out of range. I used to care, but things have changed. I've been walking 40 miles a bad road. If the Bible is right, the world will explode. I've been trying to get as far away from myself as I can. Some things are too hot to touch. The human mind can only stand so much. You can't win with the losing hand. Feel like falling in love with the first woman I meet. Putting her in a wheelbarrow and wheeling her down the street. People are crazy and times are strange. I'm locked in tight, I'm out of range. I used to care, but things have changed. Just don't show it. You can hurt someone and not even know it. The next 60 seconds could be like an eternity. Gonna get low down, gonna fly high. All the truth in the world adds up to one big lie. I'm in love with a woman that don't even appeal to me. Mr. Jinx and Miss Lucy, they jumped in the lake. I'm not that eager to make a mistake. People are crazy and times are strange. I'm locked in tight, I'm out of range. I used to care, but things have changed.
Hi, you're listening to Recovery Radio, and this is Denise, and we're in the studio with Tom, and he's been sharing about life in recovery. But before we went on break, he had shared about his family had done an intervention, which got him into some treatment. But at this point, I was hoping maybe we could go back to earlier life, some what different kinds of things happened as you were a young person, maybe as a teenager, any kind of life experiences that you feel may have played a part in the events leading up to, you know, the choice of trying drugs or, you okay. know, just whatever you think might be helpful.
Well, I was kind of a hyperactive kid, and mm-hmm. so I, you know, used to spend a lot of time up in Northern California on an almond farm with my grandfather, who's a very influential in my life. And so when I was 15 and a half, I guess, we lost him. He passed away. And so that kind of sent my whole, everything that I thought was normal down, you know, kind of spiraled mm-hmm. out of control. And started, you know, drinking some, and probably smoked pot at, you know, dances in junior high school, which mm-hmm. is what seemed normal, mm-hmm. you know, just what you kind of did.
Sure.
And at least the group of people I hung out with, mm-hmm. you know, so it would, you know, once go smoke pot and go to the dances. And from there, we'd, you know, go home and do it again, you know, same thing over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
So, but as far as losing Grandpa, that was kind of a very traumatic
sure.
thing for me when you lose somebody that you can, you know, that is your, you know, your kind of your mentor.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. And like the role that your grandfather played in your life was very supportive. And,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, and that would always work on the farm. You had plenty of time for wiggle, you mm-hmm. know, and then so I kind of, when we lost him, I kind of, then I threw myself into sports and, mm-hmm. and played football, baseball, and trained kind of all summer long,
mm-hmm.
digging holes for my father. And I was a second generation plumber, which kind of sets your destiny in stone at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But so I'd work for them and kind of dug holes all summer. And when I went to school my junior year and showed up for football, and they said I couldn't play.
Mm.
So then I did the next best thing and started selling speed to everybody that was on the football team.
Mm-hmm.
So even in the 80s, that's not legal. You know, that's
right.
that's a bad thing.
Right.
So
yeah.
Who knew, right?
Yep.
So anyway, so that didn't quite work out for me. So that's
good. Yeah, so I was going to say, it seems like your grandfather was who you spent time with and, you know, your day kind of. And then, so then you go, were you in high school when you weren't able to play football?
Yeah, I was a mm-hmm. junior.
And so then that falls through and you're searching for something to do with your time. So then it makes you happy.
Oh yeah.
And this is what you stumble across.
Oh yeah. And there's always, it seems like, they're always willing to accept in you with, mm-hmm. with, open arms. And I don't know if that's why, you know, you like-minded people are always willing to accept you, and that those mm-hmm. are the people that I just hung out with.
Sure.
So you you're doing this thing, you're doing your social scene with the guys you used to play ball with, and you're getting into selling dope to them, but you're probably, I'm guessing you're using more yourself at this point. And tell us how that rolls forward into your life up until, you know, the time you find yourself in the intervention with your family. How did you get from there to the intervention?
Well, I spent a lot of time, you know, obviously had spent 3 years in Hawaii and found that it was trying to get away from the meth scene in California. And so I went to Hawaii and discovered that they have ICE, which is like Methzilla.
Hmm.
And so that turned into another set of problems. And so as far as that goes, trying to get out of that scene, when I went back home from Hawaii after 3 years, it was trying to live life again there. And so I was married, you know, got married in that time frame. And so I had a child
mm-hmm.
and went after a couple years of having him. I got up one morning and we used to go Sunday mornings and go down to the local Denny's, had a bar, and we'd drink and watch football. And mm-hmm. so at that point, my ex said that she wanted to be an ex, and mm. said that I would be a better mother than she would be a mother. So I've got this 2-year-old that I would definitely not say straddled with, because he was kind of my life, you know, it was kind of sure. my where my heart was. And so I was doing the best I could as a drug addict would, you know,
mm-hmm.
and even though your best is still falling very, very short. You
sure.
know, you lack in everything as far as when you have, you know, a 2-year-old that needs you and you're acting both mom and dad. So,
And so you're a single parent now.
Yeah. So now mm-hmm. I'm a single parent. That's adds a whole nother set of,
sure.
And I wasn't even done cooking yet. You know, I've mm-hmm. just, my mind wasn't done growing from starting using at such a young age.
Sure.
But that kind of does, now you got somebody else to think of, and you're still not done yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I, at that point, should I jump into where?
Sure. After, yeah, so that kind of led you up to, you know, the intervention and getting into the cider house and coming out and doing the halfway house. And then you emerge from there. And what did your life look like going forward from there and some of the other challenges that you're going to face?
Yeah, after going through cider house, I just was trying to get back into work and having, you know, a background in plumbing. There's always someone that needs plumbing. I mean, I mean, everybody has a plumbing issue, so finding friends is never a problem, you know.
Right.
Because everybody has, so I've got this bathroom, you know, or I've got this house. And so there's always...
Job security.
Exactly. So there's always a something that you could always lend out a hand with. And so I am back trying to get involved with life. And after Cider House, I would kind of... ride my skateboard from the halfway house. It was 20, a little over 20 miles, 22, I can't remember, 22, 23 miles from where I was living at the halfway house to where my mom lived with my son. And so I'd skateboard all the way down there and see them. And then she'd drive me back home and I'd work and just trying to fill my life with meetings, work, and my son was kind of left, not much time left in the evening, you know, so that kind of helped as far as staying out of the bars and the drug dealers.
So once you got out of the cider house and you get settled in again, you know, you got married again?
Oh, yeah. Well, so jump forward, I guess, after I went through... I had to get, the biggest thing, I guess, was removing myself from the situation. And it's, you know, which meant for me, I had to get out of the area. And because everywhere I went was somebody, something that I knew, because your whole life revolves around that scene. And so just so happened, my father was in recovery up in, again, in Northern California. Mm-hmm. So I went up and stayed with him while he was, you know, he was going to meetings and stuff. So I'd stay up there, and that kind of helped definitely getting out of the area so that you could stay away from kind of separating yourself. For some, you know, I'm no more power to him if you can stay, get off the drugs and stay in the area with your old friends, but I don't see how that's going to play out. That's, you got to really kind of change.
Was it difficult to run into people that you used to get drugs from?
Oh, absolutely. It's one of those things, and it's so easy to fall back into that stinking thinking, you know. And so that was one of the main reasons that I kind of left that area, you know, left that situation. I had to. And that's how, when I went up north, I was, you know, kind of living a sober life. Not kind of. It was definitely living a sober life. I met my wife, my new wife of 26 years.
Oh, yeah. Congratulations.
Yeah. 26 years. And it's, and let me tell you, 26 years, there's a lot of life happens in 26 years, you know? So just keep going with that.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. So tell us about, you know, some of the things. So you're in recovery, you're newly married, and how's that going? I mean, your wife understands, you know, these things about you, I'm assuming. And,
oh, yeah.
And how was that to, like, to go into a relationship and recovery and you know, you're working on healthy, so.
Yeah. And it's good to have a wife that understands, you know, who you were, you know, and who you're trying to become. And if you're kind of both going the same direction, that definitely helps, you know, so.
Sure.
And it does help to have a wife that is kind of anti-drug. You know, anti-drug and alcohol. I mean, to the point of, you know, you kind of find your stuff out in the yard, you know.
So she kept the boundaries.
Oh, absolutely.
Set in for herself, which included you.
Yes.
Okay.
And it was, she had a little bit of background in that as far as her father was a heroin addict. And so she, that kind of put a bad taste in her mouth with drugs.
Sure. So in a way, would you say it's correct to say that she would recognize things if you started to go off track.
Oh yeah.
That she would be like, "Hey, I'm concerned." And
yes, yeah. And she'd know. And it was one of those things that it does help that I love my wife. Mm-hmm. So it does help to have that in the back of my head, as far as, you know, it's just more than me. Sure. That I'm going to hurt, right. You know, and I know I've got to have me first, mm-hmm. to make sure that I'm not hurting myself. But for me, it does help to know that I don't want to hurt her, you know, and the kids, sure. as far as that goes. So,
yeah. And it sounds like your move, you put yourself, you know, where your father is, who also understands what recovery looks like and the struggles of it. You find yourself a wife that understands those things. So you have this family support.
Right.
And do you feel like that was a big part of how you've made it?
I think it's very instrumental, mm-hmm. as far as having that support system, mm-hmm. with them and my father, my brothers, you know, as far as, you know, not wanting to let them down or even letting myself down.
Sure.
You know, so you try to have yourself set yourself on not a pedestal,
right.
but because you're not definitely not higher than anybody else, but you try to maintain some sort of somebody to look up to.
Yeah. I mean, you're getting support from loved ones that, yeah. care about you. Yeah. That's amazing and, yeah. very helpful.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Even when life happens.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we try and talk about challenges and having support. Why don't we move ahead to on your way to a wedding and the events that happened? Because, you know, in sobriety, we face a lot of different challenges. But I think this one's, for me, might have been a deal breaker. Why don't you share a little bit about that, Tom?
Well, yeah, this could be a deal breaker, but it was... I was running a plumbing company in Arizona and was pretty stressed out and not taking my blood pressure and pills, and still was one of those things where I've got a headache, I should probably pop a couple blood pressure pills. So on that note, I should probably mention that's not the way to take blood pressure pills. That's one of those things that can kind of have bad events happen. So I was on the way to the wedding. I'd had a couple heat related strokes over the couple days or the few weeks before, you know, with getting locked in a truck that was in a metal van in 110 degree weather is a bad thing.
Yeah. Never.
Yeah.
Good.
No.
Never.
So, ouch.
So I had a couple heat related incidences. And then, so when we got to the wedding in Oklahoma, I had a stroke. And then from that point, my brain swelled and crushed my optic nerve, so causing me to go blind, which means I can't see any of you guys out there today. But anyways,
that's all right. They can't see you either.
But I just, you know, just try to. That's one of those events that when you're the sole provider of the family, mm-hmm. is a big deal. You know, let alone beyond the fact of. Now I'm not able to take care of my family. I'm not able to walk across the street, you know, I mean, or find a bathroom. Mm-hmm. I know that sounds silly, but a part of the blindness was the stroke, so there's memory issues. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I guess the big picture is you just kind of have to roll with those punches as well. And, I mean, there's no way to express, you know, losing your vision is one of those things that you kind of have to learn a whole new way of life. So yeah.
and life goes on.
Oh man.
I mean, I've heard it said in recovery that people tell us you're going to feel better, and yeah. you're going to feel pain better, yep. and you're going to feel sorrow better, and you're going to feel a lot of things better, and some of those, you know, obviously losing your vision.
Yeah.
And suddenly finding yourself in a spot where you seem kind of you feel helpless.
Oh yeah.
And you know, I'm the big strong guy, I'm the dad, I take care of the family, and suddenly my young child has to, you know, walk me to the bathroom.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. And that is, and then, you know, losing your vision and then having to learn life over again. I mean, things that you would think, reading anything, you know, I mean, right down to what floor do I want to get off of the elevator? I mean, it's an issue. And then beyond that was at that same time or within about a year and a half after that, I lost my son due to, can I say it?
Sure.
Yes.
Due to suicide. And I don't want to say that I was his, I mean, I was kind of his escape, you know. I mean, we did a lot of hunting and a lot of fishing together. And if he was having a bad day, he'd be waiting out on the porch for me with a glass of tea and a fishing pole, and we would go fish. And so when I lost my vision, you know, he kind of lost himself and kind of started down a road that was obviously a dangerous road. And there was sometimes, you know, the professionals do what they think is best. And, you know, and with kids, they don't know sometimes when they're putting chemicals in their bodies, if it's the right chemicals. And sometimes, you know, it's one of those things that, anyways, the ultimate thing is keep your kids talking, you know. I mean, that's the best thing I can say is, you know, make sure that they know that you love them and keep them talking, you know. And even if you go see the professionals, you know, question what they're saying, because I mean, and once now he's gone, there's no way to say, how do you feel about that? You know, I mean, because it's there's no pain that describes that kind of pain when you lose a child. I mean, losing my vision, yeah, it sucks, but doesn't hold a candle to losing a child. So, but anyways, on that note, I just try to, as far as for me, yes, there's a grieving process, and it's been, in a couple days, will be 4 years. And the grieving process kind of, you have to grow with it. I know that sounds silly.
It goes on.
It grows
on exactly. But you're living through it, and you're staying sober through it.
And you just exactly, you know, you don't go to those slippery places. Don't go hang out in a bar. You know, that's a bad place to, if you want to stay sober, don't go hang out in a bar.
Right.
You know, that's a bad.
I've heard if you hang out in a barber shop long enough, you're bound to get a haircut.
I'm dying because Johnny said that more than once when I've been around him. And it absolutely applies at this moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Perfect. Perfect analogy. That works.
Yeah. I really like what you shared about your son and about making sure that you keep them talking. And I appreciate you sharing your real life experience in that area for people who are listening that have kids. And you just
hug
never know.
Kids,
and
man.
Yeah, man,
hug
you got to. Gotta let them know that you love them no matter what. And and when they go through changes that other people in their family are experiencing, I mean, it impacts them. It's not just us, you know. Well, if it's okay with you, Johnny, we're gonna go to a break, and you are listening to KRFP, and we will be back in a few minutes. It's about 1:39.
Tall and she grew up right with them Indiana boys on an Indiana night. Well, she moved down here at the age of 18. She blew the boys away, it was more than they'd seen. I was introduced and we both started grooving. She said, I dig you, baby, but I got to keep moving. With Mary Jane, one more time to kill the pain. I feel summer creeping in, and I'm tired of this town again.
tired of myself, tired of this town. Oh my, my, oh hell yes. Honey, put on that party dress. Buy me a drink, sing me a song. Take me as I come, cause I can't stay long.
Last dance with Mary Jane. One more time to kill the pain. Summer creeping in, I'm tired of this town again. Square, she's standing in her underwear, looking down from a hotel room. The nightfall will be coming soon. Oh my, my, oh hell yes. You got to put on that party dress. It was too cold to cry when I woke up alone. I hit my last number, I walked to the road.
Last dance with Mary Jane. One more time to kill the pain. Feel summer creeping in, and I'm tired of this town again.
This is Denise, and we're listening to Recovery Radio. In the studio today, I have Tom, and he's been sharing life in recovery and definitely different. I feel like the word challenges doesn't even begin to explain the different things that you've been through. Tom lost his sight. He lost his son. And through all this, he's just been experiencing life without having substances in it. And you know, those feelings they're real, they're deep, and they hurt. Yeah. But you've been moving forward through it. It sounds like you have an amazing family.
Yeah.
What else would you like to share with us? Just anything
well,
that...
Well, as you said, you know, I do have a good support system, mm-hmm. and that does help, you know. Mm-hmm. And for me, you have to keep talking, you know, mm-hmm. and I'm pretty sure for that's... Most of you out there too, you got to keep talking, whether it's a sponsor. Mm-hmm. I'll grab a stranger and say, hey man, you
right?
got a minute? Mm-hmm. I don't care. I need to talk to you for just a minute. Sit down or stand up or walk with me.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go get a cup of coffee. Let's talk. You know,
yeah.
And for me, that's, I think, important that you need to keep talking about it. Because the minute you stop talking and you start... You're still talking, but you're doing it in your head.
Sure.
And that's a big place to be, you
right.
know. And for me, that's a dangerous place to be.
Mm-hmm.
So you do need to just keep talking.
Yeah, I feel like there you get roadblocks when you don't just at least express these emotions or the things that you're going through to at least one other person, if not, you know, more. And it can stifle you and cause... you know, a person to go back to old behaviors and bad choices.
Oh,
and it just takes opening one door. I mean, like you're saying, I mean, if the bar is a bad place for you to be, man, don't go there.
Don't go to
you
the
know,
bar.
I mean, yeah.
Yep.
Johnny, do you have a question?
And yeah. I know when we spoke, you said you were starting to get into a position where you feel like you want to start giving back. What are some of the things you're thinking about doing?
You know, and like I said, like, giving back, and like I said, we were just talking about talking, where I met Johnny. I mean, you know, it doesn't have to be in a building. You know, you can give back by just opening your ears and listening, and then you're talking to somebody. Like, we met swimming, mm-hmm. you know, and I mean, next thing do we know, we're both sitting there in our underwear, or, well, our swimsuits.
This is, I want to clarify that this is Johnny and Tom, and that I was nowhere around there. Yeah. For my husband who's listening, probably. Just want to clarify.
Yeah. We are wearing pants.
Of course, Steve.
We're wearing swim trunks. I do want to clarify that.
Yeah, we were wearing swim trunks. And
Denise was somewhere else.
Yeah. And the next thing I know is we were having a meeting. You know, mm-hmm. and neither one of us knew that we were having a meeting.
Sure.
And we were having a meeting. It's just kind of how it is. And it's kind of, that's the good thing about this through the program, that you can find people anywhere, even at a swimming pool, mm-hmm. in a gym, or, you know, walking down the street. And if you are having that moment, grab them. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean that facetiously, but, you know. Mm-hmm. Start yeah. talking to them. You start grabbing people, we're going to get phone calls.
Right.
So.
Right. Yeah, don't do that. That's not what we're saying. I really love how the recovery community, a lot of people in it are very okay with being vulnerable and speaking about the things that have happened or are happening. And of course, I mean, everyday people that are struggling with their own things are like that too. But I think that there's just something unique that I've come across with people who are just willing to, I mean, you don't even know somebody and you can just be like, you know, here yeah. is the most detrimental things that have happened to me. And this is the ways that I've grown and learned. And this is what I'm struggling with. I think that's one of the most amazing things to me about recovery. I really do.
Absolutely. Right. I think it has a lot to do with the fact that we come, even though all our experiences are different, we come from a common place. You know, that feeling of hopelessness and helplessness, and you know, once we're able to, you know, finally trust somebody or a group mm-hmm. of people or whatever, and we're able to start opening up, you know, there are certain times where you just can't shut me up because mm-hmm. I just can't stop talking about it enough, about the, you know, positive things that can happen now. Denise and I met when we both foolishly volunteered to take over this radio program for a little bit, and turns out, Tom, that you're getting involved with the Latah Recovery Center as well.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Tell us a little bit about what you hope to do there, or what your plan is.
Well, you know, and it is the human condition that we do want to try to help others, mm-hmm. I guess, or maybe yeah. it's not the human condition.
Oh, I think it is.
But for me, I feel it's time to give back. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe for this thing, I haven't slept in the gutter in, you know, many years. Mm-hmm. I mean, that to me is a good thing. You know, I like waking up in a bed.
Yeah,
you know that's
yeah.
that, you know, yeah. And so for me, giving back now is something I kind of feel really strong about. I want to start trying to help if I can, if not help. Mm-hmm. I mean, being a blind guy, you find that people are generally nice and want to help you. Mm-hmm. And so maybe just by me being there and needing that little assistance that is, they may not know that I can get from point A to point B, mm-hmm. but by them feeling like they're helping me, maybe that is, you know, then all of a sudden there's a segue, mm-hmm. and now we're talking.
Yeah.
And right. and that is an important, important fact of life. You know, we've got to keep talking.
Yeah. And certainly you have, you know, a lot to offer to people as well from your experience. I mean, you know, like I said earlier, you know, life getting better. You know, I met a wonderful woman who's, you know, really staying instrumental in your sobriety, and you're happy and you're in love, and oh, you yeah. know, you're raising children, and then I'm blind. Get me to the bar yeah. and prop me up in the chair, and, you know, come and get the body in 6 months when yeah. I drink myself to death. But you're you know, you're being able to move through that and the medical issues and, mm-hmm. and the loss of a child. Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have a perspective on things in sobriety that I'm sure very few yeah. people have,
yeah.
but that I'm sure people who you interact with, who you intersect with in your journey here, that you will have a unique perspective. You'll be able to say, hey man, I've been through that.
Been there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that's a tremendous gift to be able to give away.
And like you said, you know, you speak of gifts, and I thought this blindness thing as a curse, as far as for so long that I don't know, through prayer, mm-hmm. you know, that one day I prayed for my vision for so long, mm-hmm. and it was literally almost like, for lack of a better word, a light coming on, mm-hmm. that I realize now that I have vision now better than I had before, because I literally can talk to anybody. Mm-hmm. I don't care who you are, what you're wearing, or what you look like, because there's no nothing there. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it is a thing of where I can literally talk to anybody, and for that, I know people feel comfortable talking with me, because I don't know the way my voice or the way I look. I have no idea, but I just am really able to talk to anybody. My daughter was laughing. It was at a store that I shop at with my kid in Oklahoma, and it's on the side of town where you would get, you know, tacos and stuff like that. And we were getting some avocados, and I stepped out, and these two guys start talking to these two guys, and I give this little boy a fisherman's handshake, and which means I just wiggle his arm sideways. They get a kick out of it.
And yeah.
So I go get in the car. My daughter's like, Dad, we got to go. So I get in the car with her. And she goes, Dad, you know those guys, they had tattoos in their eyes, on their neck. They're bangers. I'm like, isn't that cool? You know, I didn't care. They didn't care. It was just, so that's why I think I had this, you know, this awakening of this blind thing can be kind of mm-hmm. cool too, as far yeah. as through the program, which means there's no judgment either. You know, that
literally no judgment.
Literally no judgment.
Literally.
So you had to lose the curse of vision.
Yeah.
To be able to gain. I love it.
To gain yeah. vision. You yeah. know, I had to lose vision to gain vision, mm-hmm. which kind of it is an amazing gift. You know,
you see people's hearts.
Sure, exactly. Mm-hmm. And you can, and believe it or not, you can really see somebody mm-hmm. through their sound, you know, and hearing their voice, and really focus on other things that are, you know, maybe not body language, or you don't even know where they're looking at, but you can hear in their tone.
Absolutely. So thank you so much for coming in today. This was an amazing interview, and I feel really blessed. Yes. And I'm so grateful that you're here.
My pleasure.
Yeah, Tom, I'll jump in there too and just say, you know, God, what a blessing it was for yeah. me to you know, start talking to a guy in the swimming pool and find out we shared so much in common. Yeah. And thanks for letting me drag you down here today to tell your incredibly painful but hopeful story, and I'm pretty sure people will get a little something out of that today.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It is funny how God puts us in places and
right?
put people in our life. I mean, in a swimming pool of all places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, who just cool.
Who knew? Yeah. And we're gonna cut over. Denise has a little something she'd like to tell us about, and then we'll phase out.
Real quick, I would like to read just a little bit of information about Celebrate Recovery that is held on Fridays at Real Life Church. Real Life Church is over by Safeway here in Moscow. So Celebrate Recovery is here to help people walk through all sorts of hurts, habits, and hangups. At CR, you will find others who are currently struggling or have gone through these kinds of struggles: chemical dependency, codependency, physical, emotional, sexual abuse, family dysfunction, sexual addiction, eating disorders, food addiction, relationship addiction, anger management, financial recovery, grief, divorce, and more. And the where and when, again, at Real Life Moscow campus, 1428 South Blaine Street in Moscow, and they meet every Friday at 7 p.m. At 7 p.m., to 8 p.m. They sing a few songs and listen to someone teach a lesson or give a testimony. From 8 to 9, they break off into small groups, ladies with ladies, men with men. And at this time, you can share your thoughts, but there is no pressure to share. So, you know, you should go check that out. It's a great place to go. I've been there myself, and a lot of amazing people show up to that. And not just, like as I read, it's not just about drugs and alcohol. It's about a lot of things. So thank you so much, everyone, for listening today to Recovery Radio, KRFP, Moscow Pullman.